talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome to the show today. I wanted to start out, now the news is a couple days old. Syria officially welcomed back into the Arab League. And, you know, how big a deal is this? With Syria doing this means that, in official terms, the crisis in Syria is going to wind down. And Syria has a lot of protections now that it hasn't had all these years. Now, keep in mind that, you know, this was jihadis sponsored by the U.S. and the EU that went into Syria. And a lot of them came from Libya. They were Libyan al-Qaeda. You know, and the thing is this. Over the next 5 or 10 years, we're going to see a rebuild there. Now, Syria beforehand was a country that, you know, worldwide, I think they had the fourth best infrastructure, roads, bridges, etc., in the world. It doesn't sound like much of a dictatorship when you have, you know, free university, free college. Of course, you know, they had that in Libya too. So we'll see what happens with that, you know, as it goes forward. I think it's a positive development in the world. Now, yesterday was Victory Day over in Eastern Europe, Donbass, Russia, and the Russian Federation altogether. Now, the big stitch was Zelensky canceling Victory Day. And really, really think about this. Every citizen that fought in World War II, the memory of them has been outlawed. That's how big a deal it is. Now, the U.S. and the West celebrate VE Day, Victory in Europe, on May 8th. The way the clocks work, the different time zones, it was already May 9th. Hence, it's May 9th in Russia. You have a regime that celebrates Nazism, destroying the memory of the soldiers that fought against Nazism and giving the surviving Nazis those pensions. What a world we live in. And this is Biden's Ukraine. And can you imagine? I mean, think about it. Now, they can't do that in Europe, can they? But they certainly like to. Get rid of the memory of those people. And, you know, honestly, if, you know, there was any type of consciousness after death, they'd be rolling over in their graves right now anyway, because everything they fought for, everything those men and women fought for in World War II was and won, has been rolled back. And now the same fight is going on. So we'll see how that turns out. Now, at TNT Radio, we never go home, and we're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Be a part of the conversation.
I want representation I can trust.
Have your say.
Biden isn't doing enough.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. We're going to go to the news segment. We have TNT talk show host and producer extraordinaire Dede Denslow in the house. Dede, how are you and what's going on in the news today?
I'm very well, George. I hope you are well too, my friend. I've just seen as a news story literally just flashed up, something that I hadn't presented to you when I emailed you this morning. There has been another incident with a Russian fighter jet, this time with a Polish border guard aircraft, and the Polish are summoning the Russian ambassador to discuss this, and it is being described, this is Sky News, I do apologize that Sky News, George, as a very serious incident. So let's see how they can blow this up as much as they can and make a news story out of it. So that's just something that's just flashed across my desk. The story I was going to bring that I've come to you with, George, is Russia has indicated its intention to formally withdraw from the Treaty on Conventional Armed Forces in Europe, the CFE. Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov has been selected by Vladimir Putin to supervise the procedure in Russian Parliament. The CFE treaty was one of the cornerstones of the attempted de-escalation of tensions between the Warsaw Pact bloc and NATO. During the final days of the USSR, the agreement was signed in 1990 and set limits on deployment of conventional forces on the European continent. So that's between the Atlantic Ocean and the Ural Mountains in a sort of Midwest of Russia. I hope I've got that geography right. Moscow has long complained that the expansion of the US-led military bloc, which included the accession of former members of the Warsaw Pact, and I will just, that would be Poland, Hungary, Romania, Czechoslovakia, or what was once Czechoslovakia, Bulgaria, and the USSR, was undermined by the treaty. So in 2007, Russia announced a partial suspension of the CFE. This partial suspension has sort of been growing into formality ever since. But also February, Russia ended or pulled out of the START nuclear agreement, the bilateral nuclear arms reduction agreement with the US, which me and you discussed, George. The US has pulled out of various other treaties. Effectively now, there are no sort of arms treaties between Russia and NATO. The CFE, which has just been formally pulled out of now, allows both Russia and NATO to basically put as many conventional troops onto the European continent in a geographical location I just mentioned between the Atlanta and Urals, as many as there want. And I did actually go and have a look. I did go and have a look at what these numbers were. And actually, to be fair, this treaty that was in place restricted countries to 20,000 tanks. So I'm not sure how peaceful things could be kept with 20,000 tanks, 20,000 artillery pieces.
Exactly.
30,000 armored combat vehicles. I mean, these were the ceilings in the number of weapons that each of the opposing sides could have. I'm pretty sure if we said, right, we'll have a tank battle, it'll be a peaceful one. You're allowed 20,000 tanks each. I'm sure it wouldn't be very peaceful, George.
No, I agree with you. You know, it's crazy, but it has to do with the games that are being played on Russia by the West today. And none of this had to happen. The idea, you know, of the UN, the idea of, you know, diplomacy is to keep things cool. And the fact that, you know, all of this was to just make time so Ukraine could build up to war again. What do you expect Russia to do? What would you do? You know, we're trading in our baseball bat and coming back with a shotgun. I mean, what would you do?
I would arm up and prepare and become defensive. And actually, I've also done a review of the military strengths of Russia and America, because I was surprised by the numbers in the CFE. And you can see a massive difference between the way that their armies are developed. You do not want to be trying to take Russia on in their own lands, because they have tanks and artillery to boot to defend themselves. The Americans just have planes and armored fighting vehicles. I'm just dropping that in because you're saying, you know, what did you expect Russia to do? Russia right now are prepared to defend themselves.
And that's exactly right. That's what is going on in Donbass and Ukraine. And it was Ukraine that started this. You know, you can cheer for the loser. You know, go ahead. But the simple fact that Ukraine never planned on winning the war, they wanted to attrit their own people. They wanted to destroy all the people in Donbass and make the entire region unlivable. It turned it into a big gas factory. You have the second richest gas reserves in Europe underneath Donbass. So they don't need the people here. But the reserves are 5,000 meters down. And, you know, you have to frack, which poses another problem. Losing these treaties one by one by one, you know, where do you think that puts us right now? Where do you think this is headed very quickly? Well,
my question to you then, and in response to that, because I've sort of, you know, preempted that this is what you're going to ask. Will the Americans and NATO, but will the Americans be pleased that the Russians have formally withdrawn from this treaty? Because it allows them to escalate the conflict in a way that they see fit. And at the same time, say, oh, look at Russia pulling out of all these arms treaties that kept us safe for decades and decades since the Cold War, whilst at the same time actively pursuing a conflict. And now that these treaties have effectively all been ended, including some of the, you know, the nuclear missile treaties, are we actually now seeing the environment being laid out for a third world war, if you want to call it that? Because I don't think there's very much left now preventing that from happening unless the two sides get together and talk peace. And the Americans almost certainly don't want to do that, do they?
Yeah. Well, and you're right about the escalation. They're thrilled about the fact that it gives them a little bit more room to escalate in Ukraine. A failure against the people in the U.S. and, you know, Europe. The idea that, you know, our leaders are doing this and there's no reason for it. There was no conflict with Russia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have to sit back and watch this. And, you know, the proof of that is you look at what Joe Biden's being charged with right now, you know, as they ring down today. And it's, you know, the accusations against his son, Hunter, you know, for, you know, pay for play, bribes for policy, uh-huh. It's going to lead back to Ukraine. It's not just mm-hmm. Romania.
Mm-hmm.
Ukraine in a very, very big way. So, yeah, he wants this war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that leaves us.
Or to cover his tracks. I mean, do you think that Biden might be really pushing this war because he doesn't want the truth about his dealings in Ukraine, his dealings in China, how they may all be linked, COVID and the bio labs, sounding a bit conspiratorial. Do you think that Biden might be pushing the war, you know, a scorched earth policy, just to protect his own tracks and sod everybody else?
That is part of it, but it's not the only thing. There's way too much money to be made in Ukraine, and they can't stop now. They've got to keep dismantling the state. The fire sale has to go on.
Uh-huh.
Right now, Ukrainian assets it's been in the news, and the term fire sale is being thrown around.
Mm-hmm.
Grab, you know, state assets for pennies on the dollar. What can go wrong with that?
Well, a lot of money can be made. That's right. I've actually got a really interesting article that I'll telegram across to you after I get off, George. Not about everything that you just said about the fire sale, BlackRock, Vanguard, and the big corporate interest that's going into rebuild Ukraine, but also the Great Reset. And the 2030 agenda has something to do with Ukraine too, in terms of future technology, digital IDs, the digital
Ukraine,
smart country.
We did a show on it.
Right, okay.
We did a show on it a little while back. Ukraine is pioneering digital IDs, the whole smart country thing, digital currency. All those things are being pioneered. The kinks worked out, and it'll be Ukrainian technology. which means your money isn't safe. They put back doors on stuff so they can steal it.
Yeah, why do it in the most corrupt country on the planet? Why start there? It doesn't make sense, does it? We're going to use Ukraine for your the model for global communism and digital, the smart world that we're trying to create. And we'll use Ukraine as the model after we've had a third world war.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Didi, thank you so much for coming on today. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
Take care, man.
All right. Have a great evening. This is TNT Talk Radio, and we'll see you in a few months.
Pavoye Morich on TNT Radio.
Canadian pastor Archer Pawlowski, who I interviewed some 2 years ago on my podcast, the Canadian Stasi were trying to enter his church and shut him down, and he rightfully yelled at them, "You Nazi communists." That only happens in Nazi and commie regimes. And him and his forefathers lived under those regimes. You know, some people say, maybe he was too harsh. No, he was not too harsh. And judge has found Pawlowski guilty of violating Alberta Critical Infrastructure Defense Act. So he gave a talk to truckers a year ago, and now he's found guilty, and he's going to appeal and stuff, so he can go to jail just for giving a talk to truckers. Get this, the Thomas Jefferson University president might even lose his job, who knows, but the fact that he's being investigated by the whole board and administration for simply for liking a tweet from Alex Berenson, you know, the journalist that criticized COVID-1984. So you can lose your job if you like a thought crime tweet just for liking it. And likes are like, you know, I use them as bookmarks, basically. That is where we're at. If you like something, you know, better be careful. You could lose your job.
Pavoye Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
The only real prison is fear. And the only real freedom is freedom from fear. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
And welcome back. Now, I want to talk about a Wall Street Journal article by Bernard Henry Levy. It's called "A New Masada is Born in the Ukraine. The Azov Brigade Takes Its Inspiration from a Legendary Jewish Battle." And according to Levy, "I met a year ago with Ilya Semolenko, an officer in the Azov Brigade, which for 3 months kept the Ukrainian city of Mariupol from falling into Russian hands. We were buried 50 yards below ground, speaking in a maze of galleries that were once atomic shelters under Azovstal's old steel mill. Ammunition and rations were running low." Blah, blah, blah. So here we have a Jewish journalist touting Azov Battalion, which are Bandera Nazis and neo-Nazis. Why? What is the why? We've talked about a few of these things before. We've talked about, you know, it sounds really, really off the wall. The history of nationalism, when you take it back into the 18th century, specifically 1750s, 60s, and so on. All right. You take into what are called crypto Jews and heretics and apostates from the Jewish faith that converted to Catholicism, created their own form of Catholicism called Greek Catholicism in a place called Galicia. And that grew up. Now, here's the thing about, you know, we say, oh, there's a Jewish leader. How can there be Nazis? The first leader in Ukraine was one of these Jewish leaders who was a Nazi before there were Nazis. And we're looking at 1917. And this was an attempt to start a Ukraine. His name was Mikhail Okhorevsky. And during the brief existence of the Central Rada from 1917 to 18, which was headed by Ukrainian historian and ethnologist Hrushevsky, he developed the government of Ukraine. And during that time, in the next year after, he became a part of the next government. They murdered about 150,000, 200,000 Jews and 300,000 Ukrainians because nobody wanted to be a Nazis. Nobody wanted to be nationalists. Well, Hrushevsky, where did he come from? What was he? Now, he was born in 1866, and he calls himself Ukrainian, but there was no Ukraine at the time. He was born in Austria. He actually died in the Soviet Union in 1934. Now, he was also, he's listed as one of the most important figures of the Ukrainian national revival in the 20th century. He wrote a masterpiece of fiction that is touted as Ukrainian history today, and he's was the foremost organizer of scholarship and the leader of pre-revolution Ukrainian national movement, the head of the Rada, and a leading cultural figure, da blah, da blah, da blah, right? Now, so he's called a Ukrainian. Where was he born? Hrushevsky was born in 1866 to a Ukrainian noble family in the Congress of Poland. He was in the Russian Empire. It was Russia. Now, the interesting thing is you see Ukrainian noble family. There were no Ukrainian noble families. There wasn't a Ukrainian. There was no Ukraine. Where did this come from? When I talked about Jacob Frank and the Frankists, they became the Polish nobility and what was called later the Ukrainian nobility. These were heretic and apostate Jews. They switched to Catholicism, Greek Catholicism, basically a Greek Orthodoxy. All right. They were given nobility stamps, so they're, you know, nobles in the area. Now, he grew up in an area called Podilia or Podola. And he always cited it as his spiritual native land. Now, this is in what's today's Ukraine. This was Jacob Frank's city. That's who he was. The first leader of an attempted Ukraine was actually what we would term today, honestly, with their beliefs, almost a Satanist. And that's what they were. Now, his group, these Frankists, hated normal Jews. They hated Orthodox Judaism. These people were Kabbalah magnates. They read the Zohar, did magic, did this, did that. And the whole thing was corrupting the world through sin. And we're looking at this from a political point of view. So what sin did that entail? Oh, I'm going to give you one example. And first you're going to be like, what? They wanted to give women the rights to vote, equal rights right away. Well, that doesn't sound evil. It doesn't sound evil. It really doesn't. Until you realize that their idea of equal rights took away any rights any woman could ever have for protections under law, because you could only have the same protections a guy could have. For example, in that time frame, and we're looking at 1917, 1918, how many laws do you think there were against raping men. Making this kind of equality destroyed any laws protecting women from rape or crime or violence. You had equal rights. I mean, boys will be boys. They're going to fight. That was equal rights. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, not so much. And they are, their whole perspective was they needed to tear out every decent thing in every society they entered. And every law that provided any protection to the citizens, they need to tear it up. It sounds like Biden's America. And you see this going on, and the very basest thing, attacking the children. This is what they believed. This was good. So they were going to ruin the world. So in the next generation, you had these Banderas that popped up again in 2014 in Melnick, right? But in World War II, they were only a couple generations from being these apostate Jews. Well, probably three generations from being apostate Jews. Three generations, they were these Catholics, and they assimilated into that. But they never forgot they were Frankists. They never forgot that they had a war against every other Jew on the planet. And where were the Jewish people congregated worldwide? It was in their region, Galicia, in what's now Ukraine, and in what's now Belarus. Over 90% of Jewish people were in these areas. That's where they lived. So you have these Frankists, and they want to get rid of every other Jew that's not like them. What to do, what to do, what to do? Well, these conversos staffed the Holocaust camps. They did it. The Bandera are the descendants of these people. And they were the ones doing the killing during World War II. Now, we have this guy that we were talking about, Bernard Levy. Most likely, he's a descendant of one of these groups. Now, what's very, very interesting is that 1947, the leadership of Israel came from that region. They're Ukrainian. So Israel is actually a Ukrainian, well, actually a Galician country. And they populated the country. Now, at the same time, in the big migrations of Jews to America, in and around this time period, most of them came from Galicia. They are Galician Jews, same groups. Now, you know, we don't judge people by where they came from and who their forebears were. But you see, through people like Levy, who supports Azov, why? The founder of Azov, Andrei Belitsky, was part of World War II Nazi leader Slava Stetsko's Tryzeb group, the militant wing, along with Dmitry Yarosh. And it was her directly and indirectly through her husband and Stepan Bandera that were the leaders of these killers at these Holocaust groups, camps, and throughout Ukraine, and throughout Europe, because they followed the German army everywhere, killing people. This is how crazy bad some of this history can be. Now, we can look at this, and we're going to, after the break, how this plays into today's Ukraine, and why they hated Donbas, and how we need to look at this as people. You know, because it is a real thing. And we're going to take that break. We'll be back in a few minutes. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio. See you shortly.
de-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
We have a very serious situation developing in the Bay of Bengal. A tropical cyclone is developing there. And it looks to me like it is going to head later this week right for the mouth of the Ganges. And that is an area that is legendary for the most severe tropical cyclones and storm surges on the planet. And it appears this is going to become a very powerful tropical cyclone with winds well over 100 miles an hour and a massive storm surge later this week. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Klaus Schwab, founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, claims that citizen concerns over privacy and establishing accountability in business and legal structures will require adjustments in thinking. Klaus Schwab admits that the tools of the fourth industrial revolution enable new forms of surveillance and other means of control that run counter to healthy open societies. Klaus Schwab describes with some delight how these technologies can intrude into the hitherto private spaces of our minds, reading our thoughts and influencing our behavior. He foresees that law enforcement agencies and courts may retrieve memories directly from people's brains to determine guilt, and even crossing a national border might one day involve a detailed brain scan to assess an individual's security risk.
No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back. So now we have that. We have this mess of a religion that brought us into World War II and did all that damage. Okay? And here's the thing. These people today, they are Greek Catholics. And if you want to find a Ukrainian nationalist, you look for Greek Catholics, or you look for the breakoff church from Ukrainian Orthodox. You find them, and you find these nationalists. You trace back their history, and they were Jacob Frank's people, when you go back far enough. So that's crazy. But where does this bear into today? Now, in 1991, the Soviet Union fell apart. Ukraine actually tore it apart from the inside in the out. For the last 50 years of the Soviet Union, it was the Ukrainian mafia running it, loading Ukraine with all the wealth and brain power of the Soviet Union, trying to debilitate Russia and every other republic at the same time. And what they do first thing is steal everything. They were the richest country coming out of the Soviet Union for a couple years until they privatized and stole everything. But what kind of country did Free Ukraine start out at? The Ukrainian government in exile, and Mykola, I'm having a hard time with his last name right now. Anyway, the government in exile in 1991, they didn't want to recognize a Ukraine right away because they were Soviet still and there wasn't enough nationalism. All right. So when they approached Kravchuk, it was on the basis of them accepting the government, form of government that Simon Petlura had in the failed government of 1918-1919, which was designed by Khrushchevsky, this Mikhail Khrushchevsky, and Simon Petlura, mostly by Khrushchevsky. So Ukraine actually had to accept this old nationalism that was created by these apostates with the Austro-Hungarian government in Vienna. And its whole basis, its whole design was to start a war in Russia from the very beginning. And we're going back to 1918-1919. And then it revived in 1991 again. And then the Nazis came back, Slavostatsko, in 1992. And we've built up to this from that. So, you know, I talk about we're actually in the second generation of these people, you know, that it actually was able to more or less hibernate all that time until Slavostatsko came back and took it upon herself to make new political leaders. Her people have been presidents in Ukraine. Poroshenko, just one of them. The Ukrainian people have never had a chance under any of this. They just haven't. And, you know, it's wrong. So we see, you know, you hear about openly, and, you know, they deny it afterwards, but they put the videos up themselves. These groups that are coming in to help Ukraine are going to rob, rape, murder Russians, Russian soldiers, Russians everywhere they find them Russians. Most of the Ukrainian people are Russian. They consider anybody that celebrates Victory Day on May 9th in Ukraine to be Russian. Even though whether or not they are, and they are, you know, by nationality, but because they celebrate their grandparents winning over the Third Reich and the Bandera, they're enemies of the state. So it's okay if these foreigners kill them. And we have people from the UK, from Australia, from the US, from Canada. These foreigners went there to, and they call it a safari. They're killing locals. They're getting away with it, and they're having a good time. And then they come home, and they're used to that lifestyle. And this becomes the future in the home countries. And that's exactly what is going to happen. It's for a purpose. What Putin was talking about, destroying Nazism, what I'm describing to you, and if you just, you know, if you're not blown away by the span of all those decades, it still came back. It still came back. What it means is that in every country, there were political leaders, people elected to represent the people, the will of the people, the societal values of their country, who like this better, who think it's the way to go, and want you to disconnect from society so they can take it there without any fights. Once your freedom's gone, it's gone. Now, I'm going to give you an example. It's been talked about a little bit, but I'm going to give the reason behind it because no one else is. You had Tucker Carlson get fired a week ago, and you know there was a little bit of a hissy fit with Rupert Murdoch, who talked to Vladimir Zelensky. Okay, so did Ukraine have anything to do with it? Rupert Murdoch is heavily invested in Ukraine. Heavily invested. And it's through the French Club that, you know, we've described and described and described. Matthew Pagassi and his group are selling the contracts for the rebuild, selling the contracts for the purchases, buyouts of the country. That fire sale, somebody has to be managing it. And it's the people that I've been describing, saying they would be, before it actually started, because they go country to country to country doing this. Ukraine is owned. It is not a sovereign nation. It's a collection of assets at this point. They're selling out the farmland, and because foreigners can't buy it, that's what we talked about the other day, get a Ukrainian partner and lease it off them. It gets around all the laws. who suffers for it? It's the Ukrainian people. They can't compete even for the dirt on their own land, their own country. Ukrainians cannot afford the dirt to grow the vegetables. All this is coming out of Ukraine because they've turned this country. It was a very nice little country, by the way. Under the nationalists, it's a cheap crack whore of a country. There really isn't anything to say. It throw up a crack pipe, you get whatever you want in Ukraine. And it's just crazy. And before this, the Ukrainians were moral people. And now they're selling their children. It's the cottage industry now. And what else have you got? What else is there? When you start doing that, what's it means left? There's nothing left. This whole Ukrainian thing needs to be broken open and it needs to be looked at. And all the U.S. or any other country needs to do is start taking account for the money they've sent. Where did it go? Before you get another penny, where did it go? We want to see where it went. We'll allow for this much corruption, but not this much. Where'd it go? And then we're going to clean up the corruption from here out. But we're not going to get that. Joe Biden's affinity for this. Now, we talked about it with Didi, with the war. Do they want to just cover things up? Yeah, they want to cover it up. They want to keep you busy. But a guy in Biden's position needs a war to get reelected. It's his only option. It really is. If he wants any hope of being elected, he needs to be a war president, because a war president has never lost in the history of America. It's a sad fact, but it's a true. It's a truism. This is just how patently disgusting everything has gotten over the years. And we do have hope in the next election cycle, and we'll see what happens. Now, we may not get the best players in the seat, but maybe we'll get, good enough. And all it takes, to be honest with you, is someone that gives a damn about America. It's enough to start changing the world back. Because America's interests aren't in Ukraine. America's interests need to be in rebuilding America at this point. And instead, we've got all these anti-Americans running. And that's the crazy part. Anti-American. Not just anti-conservative. No. Anti-American. And we're looking at this whole border fiasco as just, it's the sum of all parties. Because it wasn't just the Democrats that got this going. And it's going to take both parties to stop this. But do you think we're going to get there anytime soon? Now, we'll see if they, how the Border Act actually shapes back up again, or if it does. And, how many immigrants can America take at one time? Or how many does it want? And with no checks and balances. You've heard a lot of talk about this. But what thing that I haven't heard is, okay, well, you have people from all these Central and South American countries, all right, that's one thing. But you also have Ukrainians, you have ISIS, you have Al-Qaeda, you have gangs from across the world, you have bad players from across the world that want to get in on the American dream. or maybe the American drug trade. And these are the people that they're letting into the United States through the border. When I was really young, I guess 18 or so, the border problem was, believe it or not, they were more concerned about Canadians come across than anyone else. Canadians, for God's sake. But it was a reality. The southern border was fairly secure at one point. Well, how was it fairly secure at one point, and what happened to it? So, we'll get from here to there. Now, I want to close talking about this whole thing with this civil trial against Donald Trump. Now, we've had the accusation of rape thrown around. And that is a very, very serious accusation. Okay? Even, in a civil trial. Now, the difference between civil and legal is legal, you need evidence. You need the facts. Civil, believe it or not, you don't. You can, if you make a good case with your accusation, you can win, which is what happened here. Now, keep in mind, when the accusation was made, E. Jean Carroll cited rape, which was thrown out. Now, if the rape accusation was thrown out, see, it's not a charge, it's an accusation, because this is civil court. What about the other accusations? How much credibility does it actually have? Obviously not enough to stand up in a legal trial. That's the point. None of this would stand up in a legal court. So what she's done, most likely at, her own political beliefs or at the behest of others with money, is bring this up during the election cycle, which is where it came up. And, this whole thing is just, and I hate to say it, it really doesn't matter what you accuse Donald Trump of today. If you had proof that he cheated on his seventh grade, math exam in November during the third week, it's persecution. There is no way Donald Trump could walk up down, Broadway in New York, pull out a gun and shoot somebody. And at this point, because of everything that's been thrown at him, the charges would be persecution. And it sounds really weird. It's because, I'm exaggerating to make a point, they're throwing everything they can at him, everything reasonable, unreasonable, unwarranted, imaginary, and whatever, to make this election cycle an impossibility for him. And charges, accusations that stem from something this serious, and it's very, very serious, that was the main accusation, rape. In my mind, if you're doing that, It's the only accusation that counts. If that didn't happen, you have no credibility on the others. You have no credibility because you have made that up. In a court of law where the benchmark for evidence is so low that it's laughable, and you could not make that stick, nothing happened. And this is the world we live in today. How many other people are going to accuse Trump of whatever? And that's what I mean. At the end of the day, going through all this with all these fake accusations, And it's going to annoy some people, but from this point forward through the election season, honestly, he's earned a pass. There is no way to discern any fact in any accusation that's leveled at Donald Trump, even with witnesses. There's no way to do it. And that's why I said he could literally walk down Broadway in New York, pull a gun in front of witnesses, shoot somebody, and he gets a pass. Because no matter what happens at this point, there are no credible witnesses available against Donald Trump. There just aren't. And, you know, quite frankly, it is a shame that the Trump family was put through all this. I know what I said sounds a little backwards. George, you just said if he did that. The point is she just said he did that. He raped her. He colluded with Putin. He did what was in the Steele dossier, all of that. And he didn't do it. So he gets a pass. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.